Hello, and welcome to today's podcast episode, where Nigel is interviewed by the IFA magazine. Thanks to Keith Ford from the IFA for having Nigel on the show. Remember to like, share, and leave a review. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the episode. Signing off, Amy from Scientium.
This is a Momentum Media production.
The IFA Show. The stories behind the financial advice headlines with the team from IFA.
Hello and welcome to the IFA Show. I'm your stand-in host for today, Keith Ford, and I'm joined by Nigel Baker, who is the CEO and founder of Scientium. Welcome, Nigel.
Hi, Keith. Thank you so much for having me today.
Not at all. It's a pleasure. Before we kind of dig into some more probing questions, I thought before we start, we could get a little bit of an introduction about yourself and your start at Scientium.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Look, I've been in the industry for a long time now. Started off in advice coming out of chartered accounting, actually. I worked in big chartered accounting firms, worked in a big bank back in the early 2000s, small boutique firms. And then after running it was Australia's fifth largest accounting group at the time, and we're probably one of the largest financial planning groups under an accounting banner, I decided to jump out and start my own independent practice. So it's 11 years ago, almost to the day. And through that journey, which that business is called Arch Capital, through that journey, we then decided to, because we weren't busy enough, to have a crack at a startup and try and solve a few problems we'll see.
Glutton for punishment, it sounds.
Yeah, well, we're just interested, and I suppose it's that curiosity. Hopefully, it turns out to work out and help people. And I suppose when we joined the industry, that's what it was all about, trying to help people. And we started to understand that it wasn't just the high net worth and the wealthy that needed help. It was a broader market as well.
Can you give me a quick rundown on what the service offering that Scientium provides is?
Yeah, if we break it down to how we started, so we were providing your normal boutique type financial advice practice, independent, but typically, you're helping more complex clients. Not always. We had a bit of an open door policy, but as we all know, and I don't need to explain what happened with all the regulations the last 10 years, but the cost started to go up and more clients are asking us to help people that, weren't your ideal client, whatever that means for a practice, but we wanted to help. So we decided to try and help those clients by building a technology solution. So this is, 4 or 5 years ago where these ideas started to form, and how could we serve those clients now? We didn't want to take away our focus from building a profitable, successful business. And obviously that requires, probably higher fee paying clients. But what we wanted to do is create something very efficient and create a great experience for those clients that also kept them going. We sort of looked long term and thought, hey, in 5-10 years, we're going to need to have some sort of relationship with these clients because they're going to be looking for something different in our view. They're not going to be looking for the traditional come in for a meeting once a quarter, go through a paper form, and have a nice chat for an hour and a half. I think the future of advice is going to need to be a lot more nimble, a lot more technology friendly. I'm not saying that that service will disappear, but I'm saying that businesses need to adapt and look at what clients are doing elsewhere in other industries, not just in financial advice, and how they're engaging with their service providers.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, there has been a lot going on regulation-wise over, the last 15 years, but recently we've had a lot going on with the QAR, the Quality of Advice Review. Do you have any thoughts on the QAR and what the government's response was?
Yeah, generally speaking, I saw it as a real positive. And the reason I saw it as a positive, it was trying to break through the ability for more people to access advice. And we know advice is complicated, and in a natural way, we've got hindsight bias to that we think that that's going to cause problems because that's what happened in the past. And so if you take a fresh sheet of paper, and you said, look, there's this financial advice industry in Australia and there's millions of people who need advice. How would we build it? And unfortunately, what's happened in the past is that we've built it based on legislation that's old and a bit of hindsight bias that things went wrong before. So let's not trust anyone. So in my view, I think what they tried to do was actually really positive and say, look, let's take a fresh look at this. Let's assume that the qualified advisors are going to do the right thing. And let's assume that the institutions are going to do the right thing. And let's work out a way that everyone can access the information they need. And the advice journey doesn't need to be full advice. The advice journey at the moment, everyone defines advice as, you need to change product or you need to be recommended a certain product. I think advice needs to change in terms of it's got to be broader, and some people just need a conversation, and that can be confirmed with an email, just like in chartered accounting. Or you're a really complicated case. Well, as a professional or as an institution who's got that responsibility, you're going to understand and you're going to refer that person to someone who can look after that situation. Like, I, as a chartered accountant, I can't do audits for, you know, top 100 companies. Right. I'm not going to buy, you know, and it might be a huge fee, but I'm going to refer that out, right? It's not something we can handle. And so that's, I think, where the financial advice industry needs to get to, that it's got to be able to play in its place and give the right advice for the right people in the right time. I think that's what QIR was trying to do.
Yeah, it's certainly trying to get as many people have access to advice as possible, which obviously it's a noble goal, I think. I'm sure most advisors would agree that having more people able to access their advice would be great, even if at the moment that's probably not possible with regulatory imposts and fees and everything like that. On that though, do you think that that position of having the advice industry decide where it's got to move people to different clients? So that would be the ideal situation with institutions like super funds having that ability to provide advice that the QAR response kind of mentioned. The ideal response there would be once it's beyond their scope, they pass them on to an advisor or tell them they need to see an advisor. Is that something that you think is in the future of advice, or is it kind of just a pipe dream?
No, absolutely. I think unless the advice industry changes its mindset a bit on this and just says, look, we want to be the source of knowledge. We want to be the source of truth. Now, not every client needs full advice as we've defined it in the past. Not every client needs a statement of advice. But as the industry and as the professionals, we want to be the source of that truth. So chartered accountants and accountants are traditionally the source of tax advice. Now, I can Google stuff and that, but if I've got something that I want to go and check, I'm going to go and look up an accountant or ask someone for an accountant. But I can go down to ITP and pay $100. I can go and pay, you know, Ernst & Young $10,000. You know, I can make that choice, and I might fumble around a bit and get it wrong. But generally speaking, not every profession's pure, as we've seen in PwC. But generally speaking, that accountant's probably going to guide me in the right way. If I go down to ITP and I've got a business and I've got a few structures and a self-managed super fund, they're probably going to say, hey, you probably need someone a bit more comprehensive than what we can handle. The same thing if I go to Ernst & Young, that professional is probably going to say, hey, we look after big companies. You're probably a bit small for us. So,
right. Bit of overkill.
Yeah. So I think that's where the financial advice industry sort of needs to get and says, look, someone with 100 grand in super wants to ask a few questions. You know, what's wrong with that person asking their provider some questions around that? And can that provider be trusted to say, look, you're now beyond our scope. We can give you the information and the facts, but we actually either have someone in-house or we now refer you out to someone. And the same thing with us as running a private practice, we can't handle the millions of people who need advice anyway. So we need to say to people who come in the door and say, look, there's a few solutions out there. There's digital, there's industry super funds, there's whatever. Now, under the current law, people get all worried about, oh, now you're giving advice. I think that's where the law needs to change and say, no, that's not advice. That's just giving people options. I'm not telling them at this stage which product to use. I'm just saying, look, there's a few options out there. And, you know, the big dealer group type compliance businesses, which let's face it, were really, they had a conflict that they wanted everyone to use their products back in the day. So they didn't want to really play that game. They wanted to say, no, everyone has to come through our channel. Everyone's getting an SOA, because now whether you've got $1 or $50,000, we're going to try and keep you under our banner. So I think we just need to open that up and go, people need to be able to move around and go to the right professional. Advice is separated from the product. And in the day, yes, some product might be needed, but that's when a professional is recommending that sort of that's towards the end of the journey, not the start of the journey. Whereas in the past, that product was like day one of the journey. You need product, let's give you advice. It's like that advice journey just needs to be a little bit longer, I think, and give people the ability to get more information before they actually change product or recommended a product.
Yeah, and I think a lot of where the kind of the skepticism or the concern from a lot of advisors is that the idea that if it opens up a bit, that how are you going to manage these possible conflicted arrangements that might pop up, which how would you kind of respond to that concern, I guess?
Well, it's natural that will happen again. Like, right? You know, that will happen. Like there will be problems in the future. You can't avoid that. But I think what you're trying to do is free up the ability for the industry to give people more access to information and advice. As I said, that advice in the past has been very specific around a certain point and a certain option, whereas what you want is people to be able to come through that door and be able to access information and engage with that, maybe self-select, maybe opt in for a small level advice, or maybe if it's right for them, go to a full level advice. And look, there'll be some institutions who will get greedy. Absolutely, that'll happen again. And that's nature. You hope not, but in a real world, yeah, there's probably going to be problems in the future. Will it be as bad as the past? I don't think so. I've got faith that I think it will be better in the future. I think the laws and regulations have shown how dangerous that is if a bank or a super fund really does the wrong thing, you know, the damages that they have to pay out. But it's not just been the banks, institutions. I mean, there's been so-called reputable firms like Dixon Advisory and all these people who did this completely the wrong thing for clients. So it's really that separation of product and advice is really where the issue comes. If people are selling product and giving advice, then it becomes a massive problem, and that could happen again in the future.
I guess there is the idea that if someone's unethical, regardless of where they work, they're going to do something unethical.
Yeah, and for big groups to be unethical, yeah, it's been a real shame. And, you know, you're not going to rule that out 100% going forward. I mean, there's a few bad lawyers, a few bad accountants. We've seen what's happened with PwC, you know, the most prestigious of the big four, you know, getting themselves in trouble over really corporate greed. And that unfortunately will happen. So you can't legislate against. So whatever people are hoping for that to be perfect, well, it's never going to be perfect, unfortunately.
Yeah. And so as we've mentioned a couple of times with, you know, trying to expand that access to advice, how does Scientium propose to solve that issue?
Yeah, well, we started to look forward and what we saw in the marketplace was really just product online. So sort of financial planning in the past online, to be brutal. It was like, well, that's not really changing the model. That's just saying buy product online. And so what we did a lot of research and engaged some people who from outside our industry who put some fresh eyes on it and said, look, this is how people are engaging with information outside of financial services. And obviously they're using their phones like we all are. We've got kids. Everyone's got kids. That's their life. And it's all our lives as well. So people are engaging differently and the financial services just really hasn't really adapted to that. They're still sort of trying to solve the problem in our view when we started looking at it with, oh, we'll just create a faster SOA or just give them access to product online. But the problem with that is that people still don't know what they're buying. Like, so people go online and buy a contract for difference. Well, what's that? And then they lose their money. You know, there's all sorts of research on the failure of people doing that sort of stuff online because they're lured by the shiny lights. They go online and buy a tech stock and, you know, buy one. So the ASX investor report last week showed that how many investors have gone online and only bought one share or bought one ETF and then stopped because that. So just selling product online doesn't work. And so we thought people need to be educated and need to have an ability to do their own research and take their own time. And some people will still get stuck and need to reach out. Some people, you know, it looks like about 3 or 4% of the population are happy to do it completely online. But the rest are sort of going, well, where do I now get help? And I don't want to go and pay $5,000 for it, but I do need some help to make this decision. And in our view, technology enabling that advisor to offer that service to say you can self-select, you can, under the current rules, get a limited, like a very limited statement of advice to have a basic product selection, or that leads you through to more complex advice. And again, being able to help more people by having that technology solution rather than saying, everyone starts here. Everyone, I can only give advice to people who need, you know, complex advice. Now, some advisory firms, fair enough, are saying, we don't want to know about it. We're happy with our 50, 100 clients. But I think we owe it to the industry bit to actually broaden that and say, well, we can help more than 100 or 200 people per advisor. And you really can do it using technology. And you can do it by that taking on that journey before what we traditionally thought was advice, that advice documentation process to get people through that channel and educating. And some people want to go on their own journey and research a lot and some people don't, then that's, you need the technology to enable that journey.
And one of the common refrains with people who are bullish on the digital advice tools, which I'm sure you are yourself, the common refrain is that it isn't here to compete with advisors, it's here to complement advisors. Is that something that you would also buy into?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're advisors. So we want advisors to be in charge of this outcome, because if they're not, then it will be like a Kodak moment. We'll be, well, we didn't adapt and now someone else has taken over, whether that's, yeah, whether it's a big industry fund or whether it's another professional just online. We've already seen that the number of people, the most commonly searched, so for someone looking for investment advice online is YouTube. So how many advisors have got video content? Probably 2% of advisors. I mean, there's a few more doing it, but is that content helpful or is it more just, you know, generic sort of market updates and things like that? So that's where the audience is. The audience is saying we want more information like that. And we've got a financial planning industry that's a bit sort of saying, no, the regulation won't let me. So you've got to sort of bring that together a bit and bring that bridge together.
Considering the quality of what you might term finfluencers, I think that space could definitely use some like actually knowledgeable people giving some input on those kind of platforms.
Yeah. There's some amazing advisors out there and they've got some great knowledge to share. And that's all we're saying. So I think these advisors can understand that at the moment, even for their current 50 clients, they're not using much technology just to replicate and share that information and engage those clients. So like if you ask advisors and say, well, where do your clients get their information from? They've got no idea. You go, well, I bet you that the stuff you send out is probably less than 10% of actually what they read. They're actually Googling other things. They're getting other newsletters. So you're not even able to, even under your own philosophy, and you've got a great story and you've got a great investment philosophy, all those sort of things, but they're getting information from all sorts of sources. So even bringing that into making that more efficient, but then being able to share that with more people and giving people, you know, we see how that can change people's lives and really help people. But not everyone needs, in my view, being an advisor, not everyone needs full advice. I mean, that's the reality. Not everyone needs full advice for the rest of their life. Like, I think the model needs to change. Like, the traditional model of I've got a client, they're a client now for the next 10, 15 years. Well, I think that model needs to change a bit as well. I think you've got to say that you've got people coming through different channels. Some might need full advice for a year or two, and it might drop down a bit. And some are happy to hover around at that low-level advice forever. Even though they might be, you know, fairly complex, they get it, and they can just sort of, I suppose, subscribe to part of that service. They don't need the full hands holding. That can also really make an advisory business really efficient and really tier its service levels to numerous client groups rather than, again, at the moment, 95% of advisory firms really just service one type of client. They might say they do more than that, but when you lift the bonnet, they really just got one service offer.
In many ways, having that kind of streamlined, we service, say, you know, retirees, or we service young clients, like that can be beneficial. But I guess having that extra ability to do some more side stuff might be helpful for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. And the other way it helps is what we originally built it for was the clients asking for assistance with their daughter or grandson or a friend of theirs who they'd almost apologize. Say, look, they're probably not the sort of client you look after, but they don't know where to go. So of course we'd say, come in for a meeting. And then you've got that dilemma of that awkwardness of going, well, it's going to cost X. This client probably can't afford that. And is it really going to add enough value for that sort of fee? But that's what it costs us to service a client. So we wanted to create a solution that helps those clients, but also, and puts them on track without needing full advice. But also for those younger clients, if we don't start to engage with those clients, you know, mum and dad might be 70 now, and 10 years time, they might not be here. And that money, which is a, you know, that intergenerational story, which is happening, we're talking to advisors who are starting to lose clients from that, because the 35-year-old daughter and son, they're saying, well, I've now got this money. I'm not using XYZ financial planner. You know, I've heard financial planners are bad. You know, I'm just going to go and buy some shares. You know, that's what they're doing, you know, because their mates are saying, no, I don't use a planner. I've got an account at ComSec. So they're losing, you know, big accounts and long-term clients because they just haven't adapted and said, we've got a solution for your children. Let's start to engage with them and bring them in. And you know, you've got to start to offer something. Now, not every client's going to take that up, but you've got to start to offer something for that next generation and bring the family group in.
Yeah, because obviously the parents trust you as the advisor. They've got that trust already built.
Yeah.
Much easier to build the trust with the client before the money has changed hands than after, I guess.
Absolutely. And being able to offer something a bit more relevant, like even the older clients really enjoy that and go, that's great. You know, I know that, you know, Sally's not going to come in. She's busy. She's got young kids. She doesn't want to come in and go through 2-hour meetings and PowerPoints, you know, they just don't. So, and when you start offering and show them the website, now this is a total white label website and content and videos, it's really engaging. And that's what we built it for, to say it's really engaging. It's something they can click at 11 o'clock at night. It's something they can watch on the bus, but they're starting to see that advisor and that firm. They're starting to see them. These are people that can help them. And that's really important that they go, actually, let's reframe this. Let's change the narrative. The financial advisor can actually help the wider population. Because at the moment, let's be honest, most people go, don't trust them. They rip mum and dad off because they don't have a dodgy planner. Two, they're expensive. Three, I'm just going to do it myself. You know, it's easy. You know, someone, I just read the paper. Someone said I can just buy top 10 stocks. You know, like, so you've got a lot of people wanting advice, but are they actually, to make them tip over to actually engaging with advisors, the advice industry needs to really change. And that's, regulation can help that, but it's also mindset of financial advice firms.
Yeah. And that point about making the content engaging is really interesting as well, because one of the recommendations in the QAR was that change, and one of the points of trying to scrap the SOA and make it a much more simplified document was also that if you can give that advice in a video form instead of a paper document, if the client's okay with that, that's one of those ways to get people to actually get the information that's in the SOA instead of just, oh, it's this massive document and we're not going to read all of this.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a little bit of way to go before that full video SOA, and I can see some.
I'm sure there is, yes.
But what we're finding is it's more that ongoing information and content. So once we started using video over text, so readership went right up through the roof, and a client would then come in for their annual meeting and they felt like they knew it. So because I'm talking most weeks about something short, sharp, the team's talking. So they come in, they talk to Josh and Nick, and they've already seen them on the video five or six times during the year. And they've heard our story, you know, so we're not having to repeat the whole, you know, that whole philosophy about whether it's a strategy about self-managed super funds or a contribution strategy, or, hey, here's a comparison between industry funds and retail funds and that, just some content. And so there's a lot of that information that they're, and then you can also see what they've liked and what they haven't liked, what they've attended, and start to really screen that towards that client saying, well, this client's actually really interested in budgeting and cash flow. Let's make the meeting about that when they do come in, because they've watched every video we've done on cash flow and budgeting, but they've ignored any market update. They've ignored anything about shares. You know, the reality is most clients actually aren't interested in that market update stuff, but there's a few, but most of them, you know, you can get that anywhere. So what they want is real. They want to know you. They want to know what you're talking about, what you're thinking about. They want to know what other clients are asking. You know, what do you think about interest rates? And just get to know you. So that video is really powerful in terms of just building that relationship. And I think then eventually, yes, you can deliver some of the advice components through video. We're not quite saying that's ready, but you can just build that relationship and make that content usable and shareable. So the beauty of that is, you know, the 19-year-old shares that with her friends because she goes, oh, look, my parents have got me now with an account with their financial advisors. This is really cool. They send, that's not me, the old guy, it's the young advisors, you know. this is interesting. This is helpful, you know. It's 60-second, 2-minute grabs at most. And it's topical around what they're interested in, you know, where it's housing or cash flow or avocado on toast, whatever, you know, like it can be much more topical than, hey, here's ASX was up 9% and the Dow was down, whatever. Like that's sort of stuff they don't engage with as much as people think they would.
In one ear, out the other type deal. So you recently, I think it was towards the end of last year, you wrote a piece that went up on IFA in which you said that capacity constraints faced by advisors are also related to inefficient systems and processes, as well as an underinvestment in technology. Would you be able to expand on that a little bit for us today?
Yeah, Keith, what we found, so we're running our own private practice and I've been part of huge groups as well. And I feel that the financial advice industry is really, really sadly been driven by regulations and compliance the last decade or so. And that's limited the ability to flip it and go, what does the consumer, what does the client really want? But yeah, we're compliant, we're focusing on compliance. We're trying to get all that right. We're looking at ways to make that efficient. But you ask any client and they go, I don't care. Well, you know, they don't care how long it takes an SOA to be driven or what it costs us. Like, it's not their problem. It's our problem. So you got to flip that and go, are we spending our time and resources on the right technology? Because if we just keep spending on faster SOAs and whatever legislation does, I'm not saying that's not important, but you got to also spend money on client engagement and ways you're improving that client experience. And now you're really asking clients what they're interested in and what sort of content they're interested in and what do they expect from their advice relationship and what sort of things can they help? Because again, what that has led to, unfortunately, is that industry, that's despite the fact that they call themselves holistic, the majority are really just super, if and a bit of investment product advisors, let's be blunt. Now, I'm not saying that's bad, but that's being almost forced by the regulation going, we've got to do all this documentation around explaining the client your first date over the one path and that. The clients are going, oh, I don't really mind. I trust you. You know, put me in whatever you want. And that's been 90% of the work, you know, to do all that and compare that and get the pricing right and compare the MERs. And it's like, well, it's not as important as the industry has made it to be. I'm not saying it's not important, but it's you know, that's, you've got to get it right. But you've got to also think about what the client experience looks like and what they're seeing and what they're coming in for a meeting for. They didn't come into the meeting to understand how 10 different products compare.
Yeah, they want something a bit more tailored to themselves, I guess.
That's right. But you look at most SOAs out there focused on comparing all these products and saying, yeah, you're going to save $1,000. That's great. But I didn't really, my whole life, I wasn't stressing about whether MLC was cheaper than OnePath. That wasn't keeping me up at night. Well, so I'm not saying it is, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, just as a hypothetical example, yeah. So we've seen recently, you know, in the kind of this financial year or the last 6 months, we've seen some fintech businesses have a bit of a struggle. What has your journey been like? And do you think that regulation at the moment's kind of supportive of fintechs, or does it kind of pose a barrier?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of excitement in tech and things. And look, I'm for my wrongs in previous life, I'm a chartered accountant. So we've run this on a shoestring, you know, on a really low budget to get it up and running. And we still run a full advice practice. So, and we've run it as advisors trying to solve the problem for our own practice and a few other practices that were willing to come on the journey with us and say, would this work or not? And how would you implement it? So it's a long game for us. We didn't build it to go and buy a mega yacht tomorrow. It's a game to say, how can we solve this problem? There's been some limited success in some of the online product guys, like who've gone, oh, let's build a, you know, go and buy this ETFs and stuff online. And I think there's a market for that, but I don't think that's really solving the massive problem. I think that's more, to be honest, probably taking market away from stockbrokers. I think for financial advisors, it's a complex business. So we're not saying that's easy to replicate online. I think if the human touch is really important. We're not saying technology will replace advice. We're saying advisors need to use more technology. If they've got that willingness to want to help more people, if they've got that willingness to say, yeah, I'm still going to focus on these highly profitable clients that do this and that, but hey, I can now, at a very low cost to me as a business, at a low cost to my clients, I can start to offer a broader range of a solution. And I think for businesses who are looking to do that, they can do it really cost effectively and start to broaden that. But yeah, running a tech business, getting it up and running, certainly not easy. I wasn't a tech guy at all. And so, yeah, understanding the systems we need, the technology we needed, the cost that's going to take, mapping all that out is certainly a journey, and it takes time, you know, but certainly it hasn't been overnight. We've got a long way to go.
You're telling me a mega yacht's not a prudent investment though? I should stay away from that one?
Probably not, but...
So I imagine that there are probably some case studies or examples of businesses that have been using Scientium that you might be able to share with us that have had a bit of success.
Yeah. So we started off so stage one of the business was a bit of content and information, and that worked really well. We had some firms, you know, it was all really no marketing. It was just me talking to advisors I knew, and they were really interested. They were saying, yeah, we're looking for a solution. But in brutal honesty, it was still a bit clunky. It was still a bit, okay, it's not quite as engaging as we need it to be. So a few months ago, we refreshed that. Fortunately, one of our shareholders has got another sort of tech business that built sort of some online learning. And we were talking about that, and we said, well, we could remorph that into what that's exactly what we're looking for. So that relaunch of that technology, really that educational portals where you can attend a course, attend a session, do it yourself or connect and total white label has really transformed it. So there's now some quite larger groups, you know, it's built to be functional for a one man, one lady advice practice to a four or five partner. You might have a few partners to a big group. So one of the groups we're working with has got 10,000 clients, and a number of them have got, you know, they're similar to our private practice where they're private practice with, you know, a couple hundred or so clients. And so we built it that way to be able to be functional for small and larger practices where they can. And I think that white label and that being able to get the team, all the advisors onto the site, the video is all embedded into the site. It's really easy to use. And they can, especially if they've got some younger advisors as well, it really helps them bring them into the piece and start to build those relationships with that sort of client group.
Lovely. Well, we might wrap it up there, Nigel. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. I think there's a lot in there for advisors to have a listen to.
Thanks so much, Keith. Appreciate being on the show today. Thanks for the time.
All right. Well, that was Nigel Baker, the CEO and founder of Scientium, and we'll see you next week.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you. Guests appearing on this podcast may have a commercial relationship with the companies mentioned.
So thanks so much for listening in to today's podcast. Just remember, it is general information. If you need personal advice, please seek an advisor or go to our website, scientium.com.au. log in and we can direct you if you need more help. Also, we just want to remind you, if you're loving this stuff, please like and subscribe and share it around. We're really enjoying spreading the word around Super and hope you enjoy it. So please do like and look out for the next episode. Cheers.